Good Friday morning to you. It is the 6th of September. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue along with Ray Graff.
Good morning.
And Alan Chartock. Good morning, Alan.
Or as the 2,000-year-old man said, hello there.
Hello there. Marty Allen, too, right?
Hello, dear. That was Marty Allen.
Allen,
slight
right.
Slight difference there.
Yeah, a little slight difference.
Yeah.
Good morning and welcome to our panel discussion. We have a lot to discuss, a lot of important issues, a lot of issues that we've been discussing over the last 2 weeks, but we will continue to discuss the various facets and forms. But first and foremost, let's get to the most important day, or the most important thing, which is I think Alan's celebrating an anniversary today.
Wow. Really?
Well, now, so how many years has Roselle put up? How many years have you and Roselle been together?
We've been together 43 years.
43 years. Wow.
Yeah, that's terrific.
And, now, is that like aluminum foil? What is that?
What wedding?
Yeah, it's like wood or paper or what is that?
Thorazine.
Is it Thorazine?
I don't. Yeah, maybe Thor's. Yeah,
she is. She should be sainted. That woman. She should be sainted.
Well, you are not alone in thinking that.
we know that.
Everybody says it. You know.
Yeah.
They all assume they're going to know Roselle. You know, and because they think I have a certain kind of personality, and then they meet Roselle, and then they always say. How come?
I have to say, there was a brief moment when I realized it was your anniversary. There was a brief moment where I thought about playing the part from a roast that we did a number of years ago, where Roselle got up and did an entire she did like a 10-minute set why it's not easy living with Alan Chartock.
And I was literally lying on the floor while she was doing it. I had no idea she had it in her, but she talked about, as you know, she talked about one of my phases in which I was eating nothing but green things. And she said she'd open up the refrigerator and there'd be these moldy green things coming out all over the place.
I was thinking about playing it, and then I was quickly reminded that most of it was not suitable for the radio.
Right.
No, actually, there was only one word.
Yeah, that's right. One word. That's true.
One word. There was only one word.
It was a good one, though.
And my producer at Channel 13 at the time, Rick Cassane, came up to me and he said, "Boy, I'd like to meet somebody who could talk like that."
There you go. Well, you've both been very lucky for 43 years, and we congratulate you and wish you a very happy anniversary.
Thank you. I just want to reiterate, me more than her. I've been luckier than she has.
Do you have plans? Are you going to go live it up?
Yeah, we're going out with some friends tonight to a fancy restaurant.
Nice. Okay.
Probably, break the bank here.
Yeah, well, it's your anniversary. It. You shouldn't have to pay, right? Make Roselle pay.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. You know, her anniversary gift is a trip to Thessalonica, Greece. That's
wow.
Where we're going.
That's nice.
Later in the year.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Very nice.
That's great. Yeah.
I remember when my parents celebrated their 50th anniversary, and my father asked my mother what she would like to do, and she said she would like to go out and have lobster. And my father said, "Why should we kill a lobster for something that happened 50 years ago?" And they didn't really talk the rest of the day.
Very nice.
That's great.
Yeah. One lovely family moment. Okay, let us begin with the news of the day. Oh, and I should also mention, of course, the big, for people it's sold out, but for the people who have tickets, the big Pete Seeger concert, which is Sunday, which will be a wonderful way to celebrate your anniversary or whatever is going on at the Paramount Theater. That's very exciting. So a reminder for people who gave money and have tickets and all of that stuff. It'll be happening this Sunday, and that is very, very cool.
Yep. That's true. And there literally are no tickets left.
No, so no tickets left. It's sold out. But I just want to remind people: if you have tickets, you can, and it'll be a big thing, and it'll be going on, and we'll talk about it. It'll be very fun. Anyway,
just one last thing on that. I had a wonderful call from Pete the other day, and he said, "This is Pete Seeger." I love that. And he said, "Keep it short, but I just wanted to tell you what this radio station means to us." And so I really thought that was very nice.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Well, it'll be a very, very special day, and it'll be a lovely weekend for you. So that's terrific. Let us start with what is happening in the news, and that is, of course, that the president was in St. Petersburg, Russia yesterday. The G20 summit is winding down this morning. President Obama and his advisors were pretty much saying that they felt that there was some, you know, some outward smiles between President Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin. There was a handshake. And then beyond that, it try to read between the lines, Alan, of what is going on between these two men?
No, I think that's right. Look, I think Putin is a central player. I think China is, because if anything gets done and is legitimate or legitimized, it's through the United Nations. So obviously the pressure is now from the president to these two countries, particularly Putin, to put a stop to this nonsense and to this genocide, which it really is, assuming that the Assad regime did it. Then it really has to be stopped. And if it could be stopped without our intervening, that would be great. But in order to do that, they have to believe, the Russians and everybody else have to believe that, in fact, we're going to do it. And that's where the double, triple fake out comes into play here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was I just want to go to another, kind of go back and forth between subjects and articles here, but there is an article that is on CNN.com, which they are taking a vote count and polling.
Is it Congress?
Yes, polling Congress as to where we stand now. And their early read on it is that the president has a long way to go still to secure congressional authorization for military action against Syria, even after clearing the Senate hurdle this week. According to CNN, there are 18 no votes in the Senate and 24 yes. 58 senators... almost the same number of votes needed to overcome any filibuster remain undecided. 58 remain undecided, and then of course in the Congress, he would need at least 217 votes, and according to CNN's count, 109 members planned to vote no, while 23. Including a number of high-profile Republicans, plan to back it. So, yes, a long road to go. And they note 280 representatives remain undecided. And I guess it brings up a couple of points that as the president works with world leaders to try to make this case, he still has to make the case at home. And if you're a congressional representative, Alan, at what point do you make up your mind? What information do you not have at this moment that you think you need to make a decision?
Well, there's only one, and that is what your constituents are feeling and how salient, in other words, how important the issue is to them. Now, I'm always fascinated by that word, representative, which, if you look at it, is representative. You know, sometimes they actually do it. Sometimes congressmen actually hold up their fingers in the wind, find out what their people want, and represent those views. In this case, they've got a tough road here, and because people don't want it. And, you know, everywhere I go, people are talking to me about it, and they're saying, what is this, and who are the, and there are bad guys on the other side, and if we help one side, we're really hurting the other side. The president says he doesn't want to get involved in all of this, in the war itself, but now we read in the Times that he's targeting their troops, that this is one of the potential sites that the president is asking be looked at.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead. Yeah, no, no. So I'm just simply saying, you go home. You're in a close race. You know things are getting closer and closer. On the one hand, the Republicans have to worry about the right wing Republicans and Tea Party people who are going to take them on in a primary. On the other hand, they have to worry about what the polls are telling them in their districts. People want now. You know, for nine out of ten things, these guys can vote on anything they want because people don't know about them. But and haven't really studied the issues. But on this, they know. And that is why this is so tough a decision for many of these representatives who are scared to death of this one.
Do you think, well, actually, let me take a break and then I'll come back with a very large question that I don't want to get into in just 1 minute. So let's take a break. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. And we would love to hear from you. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. One Roof Holistic Center, Saratoga Springs, New York. Offering mindfulness practice classes year-round. Health insurance accepted. Saratoga Stress Reduction Programs.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. Dr. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, let me ask you a question that I've been thinking about this, and it is in response, of course, as Congress and the American people think about this issue of Syria and think about wars and think of our involvement in wars in the Middle East. Particularly, it brings us, of course, to Iraq and to think about the military action taken in Iraq. And is it safe? Can we take from this at least that we learned a lesson?
Let me put it this way. I think it's a brilliant question, really, Joe. I think that central to what Americans are thinking is that their government, the people who are supposed to be telling them the truth, were lying to them the last time out in Iraq. And, you know, I hear it wherever I go. And so people are saying, you can't trust them. They made up all that stuff. They twisted the British arm. They got all of that. They got all that, you know, testimonial about, and they got a beloved American figure at the time, Colin Powell, you know, to get up and basically lie before the United Nations. Lie is a tough word because we don't know whether he was fooled, but it was really awful. As you remember, we had people on our radio station giving the other side also. We gave both sides as always. So giving the other side as, and people like Scott Ritter, he had his own personal problems later on. But let me tell you, he was a Republican, a Marine, and a weapons inspector. And he said they didn't have them. People poo-pooed us. I remember going to a group and a service group and having people yelling at me, how could I be so disloyal? So now people remember that, and there is a real price to be paid. The president says, you know, I was against that war, and I voted against it, and that's important to remember. But this one I'm for. But people, it was a may have been a Republican president, but people are not able to make that distinction. So you asked a very good question.
When you think about the president's motive in this, do you think it is as clear as he makes it seem, as if it is about the ultimately about the people, about our place in the world, and what our duty is?
Well, you know, again, you get right to the point, Joe, and that is this: who made the United States the intervener. What we're hearing now is we're the only remaining superpower. And so, therefore, it is up to us to intervene. Of course, as many of our listeners know and have pointed out, we didn't intervene in many of the African countries when there was genocide, mass genocide, and other places. So what is it that becomes important to us? Is it the oil? Is it the the protection of Israel? Is it and by the way, I think this is a very crucial question for the United States, and a legitimate one, but it is what is being said here that is what makes us the world's policeman, and when are we the world's policeman?
Well, assuming that there was a treaty in 1918 against the use of chemical weapons, even in wartime. And let's assume for a moment that evil in the world exists, okay? And let's draw a parable of bullies on a bus beating up some little kid. No one on the bus but one stands up and says, "Hey, stop it." If nobody else does it, if China and Russia doesn't do it, then isn't it incumbent, whether anybody stands up and says, "I'm going to fight evil, in this case, I think it's over the line," isn't it incumbent upon us, and I'm not saying it is, but I think that's the rationale, to step up. Even if nobody else does, somebody's got to fight those bullies.
Very well put. But on the other hand, who says... we have a United Nations. We set them up for
a reason. But the United Nations is hamstrung by China and Russia. The United Nations will do nothing in this case. And they rarely do anyway.
It's not that I disagree with you, but then the parable doesn't hold up. Because this is the school administration. This is the school bus driver. It just doesn't work that way. We set up an organization and we gave people veto power, and they're threatening or they're using their veto power. And now we say, yes, but that organization doesn't count. Only we count.
If evil exists and no one else fights it, and one person stands up to fight it, then that's the way it is. Someone does it.
Well,
or no one does.
Talk about Winston Churchill. That's what he did. You make some very good points, very strong points. On the other hand, what if it isn't a matter of bullying? What if it's a matter of national interest? And why here and then not in other places, Ray, if you're so sure of that?
I'm not sure of anything except that we have a break. I'm just pointing out the other side.
We're going to take a break. We'll let the dust settle for a moment, and then we'll come back and get back into it again. We welcome your comments as well. It's simple to be involved. All you have to do is email us, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. For the first hour of the roundtable, we welcome your input as always. roundtable@wamc.org. Ray Graff is here. Alan Chartok is here. And we welcome your comments as well. Florence of West Shokan checked in and said, "With all due respect, Mr. Graff is very cavalier with people's lives, standing up to bullies. How would he like to get his arm or leg shot off in the name of fairness? Look at the lives lost in Iraq and Afghanistan in the name of what? But war is horrible and serves no purpose. If Mr. Graff is so earnest, let him go to Syria and fight. A dear friend of mine was alive one day and 2 weeks later dead because of our misguided war in Vietnam. When does it end?"
Okay. Well,
I don't think you were cavalier.
I was not cavalier. In fact, I was pointing out, I have certainly not made a decision about this, and not that my decision matters, but I was pointing out the other side of the argument. And I would say, when is it important to do this? Was it important to fight Hitler? Was it important to fight some of the vast evils that have existed? And if not us, then who? And I'm not saying it's right in this case at all. I was just pointing out the other side. However, I would say that sometimes you got to fight the bad guys. You do. I'm not saying this is one of those times, but you have to do it sometime.
Let me just say, there's, you know, nobody at WAMC we all love more than Ray. And, you know, he was doing just what he said. He was giving an opinion. I don't happen to agree with that, you know, assessment in this case. But I have no sense that he was being cavalier at all. And let me just say, we didn't fight Hitler until, you may remember, Hitler declared war on the United States. That's something a lot of people don't remember. Roosevelt kept saying no. And at the point at which Hitler, probably the most misguided move of his entire time as a terrible jerk and bully and fascist, was to declare war after the Japanese invasion on the United States. So Roosevelt waited a long time before he did what he had to do.
We always welcome your comments. Roundtable, WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
That's the call letters, yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
A.
W-A-M-C. Thank you, Ray.
Sure. Which reminds me, a lot of people write me to this day and say, I love WMAC.
Yeah.
I don't know where that comes from. A lot of WAMC people out there, MAC people out there. But, you know, you're quite right to point that out.
And recreating one of my favorite scenes in film. Also, let us go to other issues now, other things that are making news. Let's talk about encryption. Why not?
Oh, yeah.
The National Security Agency is winning its long-running secret war on encryption using supercomputers, technical trickery, court orders, and behind-the-scenes persuasion to undermine the major tools protecting the privacy of everyday communications in the internet age. That, according to newly disclosed documents that appear in the New York Times this morning. The agency has circumvented or cracked much of the encryption or digital scrambling that guards global commerce and banking systems, protects sensitive data like trade secrets and medical records, and automatically secures the emails, web searches, internet chats, and phone calls of Americans and others. I found the story interesting for two reasons, and one of them was because I found a fascinating conversation on Vox Pop 2 days ago.
Yes, with Tony.
With Tony, about, because you were talking about the recent break-ins to the New York Times and so forth, and the
yeah.
hacking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they can do it, if this group, this Syrian group, can do it, well, you know, who can't?
And, you know, he knows much more than he will say. Okay.
you get that impression.
He knows much more than he will say, even off the air. I before the show, I was asking him about some of this stuff, and you know, I think these people who run these systems, and the New York Times has a robust budget to protect itself, and they, you know, they're two steps behind all the time. And then we talked about encryption. We talked about, you know, the levels of encryption, and a lot of the online banking is, you know, so far advanced, so much more encryption than is needed right now, that they think they need right now. But I made the point, is that somewhere there is a warehouse that our government has that has a computer big enough and fast enough to crack any encryption. And we said this 2 days ago.
Yeah, it was something that, as I said, there were two things that stood out to me in this article, that being one of them. The other being that, as the article points out, many users assume or have been assured by internet companies that their data is safe.
Yeah.
That no one can pry into their data, that their banking data, their personal data, whatever secrets they may have or perceived secrets, that stuff is safe. So how do you now go to the American people and say, okay, well, that stuff is safe? Because if also the other point, if the NSA is able to so easily do it, then you can just assume that others are fairly easily able to do it.
I would say the NSA is probably at the vanguard, though, eh?
Well, sure, except for look at this group out of Syria. They're doing it, right?
Well,
and there are 12-year-olds who can do it. I mean, you know, what's so fascinating about this is there's always somebody out there who is getting a leg up. And who is who's capable of doing it and messing up the Pentagon and messing up the New York Times and messing up, you know, banks. It happens all the time.
We had director John Badham on the program last week, and we were running a little clip from the movie War Games. And I don't know, do you remember that movie, Ray?
Nope.
Alan, do you remember that movie?
Okay. Nope.
Okay.
That was post Mr. Roberts.
Yeah.
So,
all right. It was 1983, and it was with Matthew Broderick and Ally Sheedy, and basically it was the story, which was this kid who's a computer nerd, sees all of these new games coming out on his huge computer that's in his room, and he decides to try to hack into the system to find out these new games. Well, he unwittingly hacks into the Pentagon, and the quote-unquote computer games that he's playing are real games, and missiles are going off all over the place. You know, that, of course, at the time, we considered that to be, science fiction, funny kids, isn't this cute? And I was watching it the other day, and I thought, well, you know, this is what we're dealing with now. I mean, obviously, not to that extent, but all of the power that we have in this technology, that we think we have security and privacy, everything that we sign, everything that we do that has an official connotation to it has some sort of privacy statement,
that no one reads,
and no one pays attention to. We just assume, I think that's safe to say, that we assume that our information is safe and that they can't use it, and that we have some privacy when it comes to the information that we put online. And and when you read things like this, all right, well, you don't.
Can I change my answer?
Of course.
It was not allowed.
Was it the War Games analogy?
Okay. Can I change my answer? I actually did see it. I saw it on television. I didn't know what it was. I didn't see the end. I didn't see the beginning. But I saw a good part of it.
Excellent.
I changed my answer.
Okay. I thought you were going to change
it,
your...
Does it matter? No. It doesn't matter that I saw it or not.
Okay.
So what's the end game here? I mean, the only way you're going to have privacy is to be off the grid completely, and even then the satellites are looking down on you. So what's your end game, Donahue?
I don't know that I need one.
You do. You do.
Okay, but the real question to me is, at what point does somebody start to use this data for bad stuff, right? In other words, okay, so the NSA can look at your banking records, and their argument may be, hey, we're only looking for terrorists. But at what point does some president get in there? Tricky Nixon, for example, was one guy who kept saying, can't we send the IRS after these guys? Political enemies. At what point does this get used for evil?
Exactly. And can I ask a very simplistic question with a very old reference that perhaps just brings us to, it seems that we go around in circles in this stuff. But I remember when Robert Bork was looking to be a Supreme Court justice, and at some point somebody said, and this argument came back during the debate over the Patriot Act, that the argument came that someone went to his video store and looked at the movies that he had rented.
Yeah.
And that suddenly became of interest to the American people because of the films that he had rented would somehow give an indication of how he would vote on certain issues. Mm-hmm. And that was information, of course, that he said was private information that people did not have any right to see. So, you know, getting back to your original question, Ray, and of course to Alan's point, how do you stay out of that and keep it from being used against you when you're simply going to the library and taking out a book, or if you are simply working on a research paper for college, or if you are doing a project for journalism at your job?
You know, I was eating with some guys from a cable network. I'm not going to tell you who they were, years ago. I was talking to them and saying, well, now, if somebody watches a dirty film on a piece of pornography on the air, will you be able to see that? He said, of course we see it. We know that. And I don't know how much he was kidding around and a lot more about you. That was interesting.
Well, sure. I mean, all of the, I mean, besides the fact that it has to be, in most cases now, it has to be billed. But it also, you know, this was always the thing of, with hotels. You know, could you go back to those records and say, you know, what you purchased, whether it be an in-room movie, pornographic or otherwise,
right,
or a, you know, something out of the bar.
You mean a drink?
Yeah.
I see.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Joe Donahue had a grasshopper at the Hilton? I mean, that's important?
Well, I don't know that any of it's important. It's I think Alan's point is if they want to use something against you, they can use something against you and they can get this information. If you're readily putting it out on the online and they're taking it, you know, what is safe and what is not. Yeah. I personally wouldn't worry one bit about going online and taking out a library book. But if somebody is going to use it against you and use it as Alan says for evil, then how do you stop that? And I don't know the answer to it. But it seems like something that's very cyclical. Because what Bork was however many decades ago.
Yeah.
Has anybody seen Genie?
The show?
No. Genie, who's out of the bottle.
Oh.
I mean, in other words, it's all over. We can be standing here talking about it. Now the question for civil libertarians and others is, how do you convince the American people that it's a good thing to protect them? And that it isn't just the bad guys who may get caught up in this kind of thing. You know, I was thinking about this. People have been sending in for their FBI files. You know, you can do that. And they've been finding amazing things on that FBI files. Martin Luther King certainly found out about that and others that the Federal Bureau of Investigation found relevant to just doing background searches on people.
And
period.
Okay. So, what did yours say?
You know, I never did it. I never did it. But well, I'm pretty sure.
There's an
I'm
anniversary
pretty sure
present.
I've got one. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've got one.
Pull up Shartok's file. You know, Haldeman, get me Shartok's file.
I'm pretty sure I got one.
We're due for a break, aren't we?
Yes, please.
Yes, okay. We're going to take a
break. Oh, please, yes.
We'll be back, and then we'll wrap up our conversation with a few other tidbits in the news. You're listening to the Roundtable.
I'll be going looking for... I'll look for Genie in the meantime.
Okay, yes, yes. Put the toothpaste and Genie back in the tube and bottle, respectively. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Springbrook, Oneonta, New York, supporting people of all ages with developmental disabilities, working in schools, in homes, and in communities across New York to help individuals achieve independence. SpringbrookNY.org. Taste of New Paltz, 23rd Annual Fall Food and Beer Festival, offering fare from regional restaurants, wineries, farm markets, and craft beer, Sunday, September 15th, Ulster County Fairgrounds, newpaltzchamber.org, or on Facebook. And Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont, curtislumber.com.
Saw this article in the LA Times yesterday, and I was struck by it, so I wanted to bring it up to the panel and have our listeners take a whack at it as well. Should tipping be abolished is the question. Should tipping be abolished? Many are calling for just that, arguing that there is no correlation anymore between better service and better tips, and that tips are often abused. But another question is, can tipping be abolished? Experts and history say, yes, we're probably stuck with it. A spate of restaurants announced over the last month, including Sushi Yasuda in...
It's easy for you to say.
...New York and Troy Mech
and... To
and
eat.
What?
And to eat, he said to say and to eat.
Yes, yes. And...
Whatever.
Nozawa Bar in Los Angeles have done away with tipping, instituting either higher prices or a service charge and garnering plenty of recent negative media attention as well. Efforts to end tipping in the U.S. began as soon as the custom was introduced, and some believe that it originated going all the way back to the 17th century and English taverns. But the issue is that we've kind of lost this with people going out to eat and with restaurants becoming, in some cases, more and more expensive, that the tipping is a way to supplement income for the server, but often it does not. It is just something that is expected. It is and does not indicate good service. And so the question that the LA Times is asking after this spate of restaurants has done away with the policy is, should tipping be abolished?
So the restaurants have done away with this. So that means if I am a customer and I throw down a tip anyway, then what happens to that money?
Well, I don't know. They tell you not to do that.
But what if you do? You're the customer's always right. What if I do it anyway?
Well, I don't know.
Well, let's.
I mean, if you left $10 on a table, I don't know what's going to happen to it. But if you leave your credit card, that line would not be there to add the tip. But they're charging you more, so hopefully they can pay the servers more, but you don't know do you trust that? I don't know. Alan, what do you think?
Alan's just hoping that the tips go away before his anniversary dinner tonight.
or before the program goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no. I am a compulsive 20% or more tipper. I believe that the people who serve us deserve tips. I have a colleague, a very good and wonderful man, at the university, who goes into great paroxysms pain of figuring out, is this a
calculator?
16%, 17% person based on, did she bring the water when I asked for the water and the rest of this kind of stuff? I don't believe in that. I don't know. But my mother used to say something, that the size of the tip should often depend on whether you're coming back or not.
Your mother was right.
I agree. I'll tell you, there are places that I go all the time. There's this restaurant I go to every week for every Saturday morning for breakfast, and we leave a very large tip for the lovely,
exactly.
lovely staff that take care of us every morning, because we know we're going to be back, and they're also, you know they're not making much, and they're busting their humps, and they're all working really, really hard, and you should, help them out. But by the same token, have we gotten away from that idea that a tip is commensurate to the quality of the service that you have received?
We got away from that. Yes, we got away from that. Now it's just seen as you're a miserable person if you don't leave, a tip.
Right.
And if you don't leave, the right tip. That's right. The one place I can never figure out about how to tip is in the cab in New York City.
Yeah.
Well, they made that a little. They made it a little easier if you do it with your card.
You can pay with cards now?
Yeah. Because it comes right up in the screen, and it'll say you can leave a 10% tip, a 15% tip, a 20% tip, a 25% tip, and then it'll figure it out for you, and then it just takes it off.
That's impressive.
Yeah, but who knows what's right? I mean, the lovely Roselle believes in a 20% tip in a cab.
Well, I mean, if you don't get killed, then it's worth a tip, right?
I do whatever she tells me.
Yeah.
So that's what I do.
And then that is the secret to a happy 43-year marriage.
And so we have come full circle on this round, round table.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
oh, that's great.
That's right. That's the one.
Well, that's the end. Check, please. I'll pay the tip.
All right. Excellent. Time to say goodbye to our radio friends.
Well, there's actually two more hours, so let's not say goodbye. Say, we'll see you soon.
Well, if you're still here, stay tuned.
But that's your problem.
Alan, a very happy anniversary to you and Roselle. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend, and Ray, enjoy. And I'll be away next week. You're going to be filling in. Thank you very much for doing that.
Hey,
I appreciate
my pleasure.
That. Thank you.
You'll leave a tip at the end of the week. Yes?
Indeed, I will. Right. I'll bring you back a present.
Okay.
A little T-shirt or something.
Till ready.
you're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.